Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Halfway home, you're listening to The Drive. Thank you so much. It is Carrington Harrison here, Brandon Kiley, taking you up until 6 o'clock. We have full shows today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. We do not have full shows on Friday because Kansas State is in the NCAA tournament. So we'll be on after that game. We'll also be on during the Kansas game on Thursday, giving you live reaction to the NCAA tournament. Again, thank you so much for listening. We got a lot of stuff to get into. We're kind of bouncing back and forth between the Kansas City Chiefs, who I think are still the top story in Kansas City. It's a little bit of a 1A, 1B situation when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs and the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about the tournament coming up here in just a little bit. Of Kansas fans are very surprising to me. Well, I'm like always interested in the psyche of a KU fan and trying to understand more about them. Like, someone should write a paper, like a big thesis paper. Their doctorate study should be on the psyche and mindset of a KU fan, because they say a lot of things that confuse me. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. And we'll also talk about how KU fans are very down on this team. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. But I don't know if you guys do this or not, but there's two kind of people in this world. There are people that grocery shop like me. I just grab a basket. I then go around the store, and things that look good, I just throw them in the basket.
You're a monster.
Oh, I need salad. Oh, okay, let me get some salad. Oh, that looks good. Let me grab that. I have no plan, no structure. There's no rhyme or reason when I go to the grocery store.
See, that's the one walking around seven times around the different aisles.
100%. Some of you are way better prepared than I am. You go in there with the checklist. You go in there with, we need to get X, Y, and Z. I appreciate you people. I have never walked into the grocery store one time in my life with a shopping list. I'm not going to lie to you guys. If I was an NFL general manager, I would probably do free agency like the Detroit Lions. Oh, man, you said I can get Trey Flowers? Let's get Trey Flowers. Ooh, Jesse James. I played with him on Madden. He was good. Let me get him. I would have no rhyme or reason in free agency. I would be out here willy-nilly spending money in free agency. Brett Veach, he is the other kind. He clearly had a shopping list. We need to get these things in free agency. Now, maybe he's not done shopping, but I think we were starting to see was pretty clear what the Chiefs felt like they need to check off the checklist in free agency. Number one in free agency, I think this team wanted to change the mindset and identity of its team. That the mindset and identity of this team could not be wrapped around Justin Houston and Dee Ford and the pass rush in the ways that it was yesterday. Gone were the days of counting on emotional leader Eric Berry to come on the field and give you some kind of emotional lift and some kind of spark. The defense had to be built around a new player. I think it's pretty clear that that player was Tyrann Mathieu.
The one thing that we said, you know, you can acquire as many great players and as many talented players as you like, but until you have the catalyst to make it go, things will never work out the way you want them. And this was the catalyst that we had to have.
Think about the three players that we know Brett Veach has really tried to target, whether it was in free agency or whether it was in at the trade deadline. Tyrann Mathieu, we agree, type A personality, a guy that receives a lot of respect from the other guys in the NFL, not just on his team, around the league, a guy who's a really productive player. Earl Thomas, certainly an A, a guy that other players in the room gravitate towards, veteran, younger players, a guy who can be a future Hall of Famer in my mind. Maybe he has to wait a little bit, but I think Earl Thomas eventually can get into the NFL. Think about the other player, Patrick Peterson. I would say along the same line of Tyrann Mathieu, a guy who gets a lot of respect from other guys in the NFL, a guy who a lot of players in the NFL hold in very high regard, great college player. Everybody has all the respect in the world for Patrick Peterson. Never heard anyone say anything bad about Patrick Peterson. Those are the kind of players that we know Veach has gone out there and targeted in free agency. That I think part of checklist one was, what does this team need? We need an alpha dog. We need a type A personality. We need to bring in somebody that the other guys in the locker room look up to. That Chris Jones is a really good player. Chris Jones will come into this situation, even though he's the younger player, even though he's the highest paid player, he will look up to someone like Tyrann Mathieu. He will look up to someone like Earl Thomas. They didn't get Earl Thomas, but Tyrann Mathieu, I think by the way that they talked about him, is clearly the 1A on this team. I think when it came to edge rushers, they wanted a different kind of pass rusher. That for whatever reason, the Chiefs were not sold on D Ford and were never sold on D Ford. I don't think they wanted him at the beginning of the season. He kind of played their hand a little bit and came out and balled out and had the kind of year that you guys know what the year I'm talking about. The Chiefs never gave you any indication that he was part of their long-term plans or their short-term plans. Tell me something you've heard on the record. Show me a story. Give me a source that would lead you to believe that the Chiefs really believed in D Ford. That now it's, let's go find the defensive ends. Let's go find the defensive players that fit what we want to do. They went and got Alex Okafor. I expect them to go make a couple of other moves as they continue to put their thumbprint, their handprint all over this team. I think it's clear that they wanted to get a veteran corner. This team could not go into a season with Charvarius Ward, Tremont Smith, and Kendall Fuller, and that's it when it comes to cornerback, and I would say a draft pick. Even though you like Greedy Williams, even though you like DeAndre Baker out of Georgia, you needed a veteran player, I think. You got him in Bashaud Breeland. You didn't have to wait like you did with Orlando Scantrick for somebody to get cut. You went out there, you identified Ronald Darby. Hey, we need to get one of these three guys when it comes to veteran cornerbacks. You brought in Darby for a visit. You wined and dined him, had him here for 2 days, really seemed to like him. He went back to Philadelphia. All right, knows the system, knows the team, makes sense. You brought in Denard from the Cincinnati Bengals, didn't work out for whatever reason, or could still work out, but hasn't worked out to this point. Maybe he wants a little bit too much money. Rumors were that he wants $10 million a year. I don't think the Chiefs were paying that, especially when you factor in what they just gave Bashaud Breeland. You brought in Bashaud Breeland. Now, the one thing I don't think we know yet is what kind of pass rusher that they do like, because all we know from pass rushers they like are Breeland Speaks and Tano Passanio. I don't know any other kind of pass rusher they like. They didn't like Justin Houston. They didn't like D Ford. They don't like Alan Bailey. Let's see what kind of pass rusher they do like. But I think it's clear, if we're using the grocery shopping analogy, I think it's clear the checklist. And they've checked a lot of those things off. They checked off the list of impact player, leader, ball-hawking kind of safety they desperately wanted in Tyrann Mathieu. Got it. They checked off the list of, we need an established veteran cornerback in the NFL, and we're not going to spend a whole lot of money. Look at it. All three of those guys, Roby, Darby, and Denard, not Denard at this point. He hasn't signed a deal yet. But Breeland, excuse me, all signed one-year deals. So there are one-year deals out there. And if I'm going to guess, I'm assuming that Denard's signing a one-year deal too, because that's what all these corners are. So it's possible you get two of those guys. I think the Chiefs have a different vision for upgrading this defense than many of you. Everybody is holding the belief of they just got to get to 23rd defensively. I think Veach is thinking way bigger than that. They've gone through not an improvement from last year. They have gone from a complete overhaul. If you're going to remove 60% of the sacks you got last season, if you're going to cut your all-pro safety who could play this year, if you're going to go out there and theoretically try to get Earl Thomas and get Bashaud and go get Tyrann Mathieu, you were thinking very big picture and trying to put together a championship-level defense, not just one that can be competitive.
I wonder if what they've done, though, as going out and getting Bashaud Breeland, going out and getting Alex Okafor, I wonder if these were the alternative to bringing in Earl Thomas. Like, when they missed out on Earl Thomas, now you have $12 million that you can spend elsewhere. Is that money now being spent on Breeland and Okafor, or is that money still money that hasn't been spent yet? I think that's something that I'm really interested in, because you haven't replaced the Earl Thomas impact. You're probably not going to be able to with this free agency.
Probably not.
The only way you could do that is if it's going to come via trade. So are those moves the moves that replace that money, or are they the moves that you were going to also make along with bringing in Earl Thomas? Because if that's the case, they still have something left. They still have a big move coming, and that's what I'm hoping for, because I do still think there are some holes. There are some impact guys that need to be added to this defense.
And I'm looking right now of what I think the Chiefs need now at this point, at least via free agency. I don't think corner is a need anymore in free agency. I think it's a need in the draft. I don't know if need is a free agency thing in this. I'm certainly not going to ever turn down on you getting free agents when it comes to one-year deals and corners. So if this team signed Denard and it's going to be a Tremont Smith, you got to fight for being that nickel corner. You got to fight to be the third, fourth corner on this team. I'm all for it. I'm all for bringing in guys that can rush the passer. I'm all for you bringing in quarterbacks. I'm all for you bringing in guys who can defend the pass and be quality cornerbacks. So if this team's going to go one-year option on Bashaud Breeland, one-year option on Denard from Cincinnati, I got no issue with that. But they got to answer the pass rush. I feel like now I'm the only person in Kansas City that's worried about the pass rush. I do. I don't feel like any of you guys care about it the way I do. I feel like because they finished first last year in sacks and their defense wasn't good and the Patriots finished 30th in sacks and won the Super Bowl, no one has put emphasis on getting to the quarterback. I'm sorry. I feel very uneasy going into a draft or going into a season in which Chris Jones is your number one pass rusher, perfectly fine. Your next pass rusher is Breland Speaks and Tano Passanio, and I have no clue where the other sacks are going to come from. And I would say, unless they're talking about internally trading up to go get Nick Bosa or trading up to go get Josh Allen, there's no player that they are going to sign that is going to get you 8 sacks next year or draft. There's no player they're going to draft that is going to get them 8 sacks next year if they're not interested in trading up to the top 10 or 12, which is a big jump from where they are at 30. Not impossible, but a big jump in selling off a lot of the resources that they seem to value. You can get 8 sacks from Ndamukong Suh, though. You can get 8 sacks from Ziggy Ansah. You can get 8 sacks from Clay Matthews. So if we're talking of checklist, the last thing I like to see them check off on their checklist is veteran pass rusher. That would be a really good overhaul. If you're telling me before we get to the NFL draft and before you can make any big-time, massive kind of trade, still a lot of time to do that. Think about it. Khalil Mack got traded a week before the season started. You go get a veteran corner in Bashaud Breeland. Certainly an upgrade over Orlando Scandrick. Certainly an upgrade over David Amerson from last season. You go get a safety. Tyrann Mathieu is a better safety than Eric Berry at this stage in their career. Love EB. Tyrann Mathieu's better than him. Earl Thomas would have been better than him. If you can now go get you a veteran pass rusher that fits your system and your scheme, you came out ahead, and I think you can give this free agency period an A+. Until then, hard for me to give an A+. I'll give it a B. I'll give it a B+. I think they've had a good free agency period. Until they can shore up the pass rush just a little bit, it's hard for me to give it an A+. Coming up in just a little bit, this is the least optimistic I've seen KU feel about their team in a long time. Plus, KU fans, I got a question on how you feel about your team. We'll get into it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, we're talking a little bit about pass rush. We'll get back into KU coming up here in a little bit and talk a little NCAA tournament and March Madness. CDOT, there's a tons of day one ready draft prospects through round three. You're crazy. Another message that I got from my guy. I think they may move Chris Jones outside and draft someone in the interior defensive edge or move up to get an edge rusher. A lot of really good interior linemen that can start day one. Maybe this is just a difference in belief or philosophy when it comes to the NFL draft. If the Chiefs aren't interested in trading up to the top 10 of the NFL draft, I don't think you're getting a lot of really good pass rush. Can you find a defensive lineman that can start for you on day two? Absolutely. Chris Jones started for you. You could find another Chris Jones type rookie year. And I'm not saying he's going to develop into what Chris Jones developed into, but I'm not saying at all it's not possible for you to find a starting defensive lineman with the 47th overall pick. Just pick a random number. I'm saying is right now we can agree there's only one person that can get to the quarterback on their team. Only one person. I don't know if they're answering that in the draft if they're not going to select high. If they're not interested in either trading for a pass rusher, which you now have the assets to do so, or moving up in the draft to get a really good prospect and telling them, go get to the quarterback, I just don't know how they're getting the pressure based on the guys they currently have on their roster. And BK, you got the numbers of, if you don't select high in the draft, a lot of times you don't get immediate pass rushing help from your defensive prospect.
Yeah, so since 2010, there have been a total of 5 players who had at least double-digit sacks in their rookie season. So 5 guys since 2010 had double-digit sacks. Those guys were Bradley Chubb, selected 5th overall, Joey Bosa, selected 3rd overall, Aldon Smith, 7th overall, Von Miller, 2nd overall, and Ndamukong Suh, 2nd overall. All of them within the top 7 picks.
Because the odds are, the guys that can help you from day one when it comes to pass rush, Josh Allen, Nick Bosa, are not going to be available whenever you pick. Like, what's the highest you think this team trades up to? 12? 13 is probably the highest they move up to? That's a big jump to go from 30th to 12. I don't think either one of those guys are going to be there, just given the history of the NFL draft. We'll get back to the Chiefs in a little bit, but I want to get into KU here as March Madness is right around the corner. So we were arguing and debating the seed for KU. And I'll continue to say this. It's not that I don't think KU is a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. They are the prototypical 4 seed. I don't think they should be the four seed in the region in which they are in, because the pod system to me should not benefit teams that are four seeds. The pod system should benefit North Carolina. The pod system should benefit Kentucky, not put them in potential road game environments in the Sweet 16. So I just disagree with the pod environment. It's not a KU problem. I don't like the way the pod system treats teams. I don't think if you're a team like Tennessee, you should be forced to essentially go on the road if Cincinnati wins and play Cincinnati in Columbus, Ohio, when you're the two seed. Doesn't sound like a good situation for you to be in. I feel like the pod system should do a little bit better job of protecting teams. And if you think a team can have a certain geographical advantage, just move them elsewhere. There's other regions that KU can be a four seed in. There's three other regions. Put them in that region. They don't need to be in Kansas City in the Midwest region. But this is what I want to talk about more than anything. And correct me if I'm wrong, KU fan, because I'm not a KU fan. Some of you genuinely believe that Sprint Center is not an advantage. Yesterday on Twitter, people are saying we don't play well in Sprint Center. What are you talking about? You're 45-10 at Sprint Center. You win 80% of your games at Sprint Center. Where is this that KU doesn't play well in Sprint Center notion come from? Because I legitimately don't understand where it comes from. Does it come from the fact of they had a chance to go to the Final Four at BK and they lost to Oregon? Is that where it comes from? Because it is incredible to me how you can win 80% of your games in a venue and then in the same breath tell me that that place is not an advantage for you. That I feel like sometimes perception becomes reality, and the fact of KU lost a big game, the last really big game they had at Sprint Center, or the fact of I think Iowa State fans use Sprint Center to more of a home court advantage than I think KU fans do. But let's not kid ourselves. Playing at Sprint Center is a possible, incredible advantage for KU.
I think the other thing you have to keep in mind, C-Dot, is some of their lack of success in the Big 12 tournament at the Sprint Center. I think that maybe plays into it as well.
They win 80% of their games.
I'm saying relatively. I'm playing devil's advocate.
This is what I think it is. I think that KU's home court advantage is so powerful and so incredible that it is impossible to see any other advantage they could have. That they are so great at Allen Fieldhouse under Bill Self. They are so good at Allen that it's hard for you to see that playing in the city that has your strongest alumni base aside from Lawrence, Kansas, to see that playing in a game, 60 miles away, 75 miles away? I don't know the exact geographic miles.
I don't even think it's that far.
It ain't that far away. I know that much. It ain't that far away. You can't see the huge advantage that's in. I bet you Roy Williams was mad when he saw that. That was your four seed. I bet he was mad. They maybe won't say it publicly, but I bet if you ask Roy Williams, are you upset that KU is your potential four seed? Aside from his ties to KU and his relationship, just the fact of KU will essentially have to play, or UNC essentially play a road game in the Sweet 16. That's just not what I think the pod system should be.
Lawrence, by the way, 40 miles from Kansas.
My bad, it was even closer than I thought it was. I go there so often, I should know. I should know how far away Lawrence is.
It's a New York suburb away from Kansas City.
Hop, skip, and a jump away. Maybe it was just a vocal minority yesterday when we were having this conversation on social media. KU fans genuinely believe that Sprint Center is not an advantage for their team.
We just got this on Twitter as well. Check their record for big games at Sprint Center. Listen, teams lose big games. There's a reason why they're big games. Going to the Elite Eight, it's going to be difficult to win. You get an advantage by playing in the place that is 30 minutes away from the place where you would otherwise play your home game.
This would be my question, and I do want to talk a little bit of K-State. What place would you rather play? They're not putting tournament games in Allen Fieldhouse. I'm sure it would be great for KU. They might win the national championship if they put the NCAA tournament in Allen Fieldhouse. That ain't happening. Where would you rather them play?
There are four options.
You rather them go to Tulsa over Kansas City?
Well, there's only four for the regionals.
I'm saying is of any place that we think is realistic, the only other place you maybe choose is Wichita. Of places that can realistically, they aren't putting NCAA tournament games in Garden City. They're not putting them in Leavenworth, you know? What other possible realistic venue, if you asked Bill Self, where would you choose to play your conference tournament games, where would you choose to play your NCAA tournament games, he would pick that building. How can you not argue it's an advantage? It's 40 miles from the school. It has the largest alumni base of any. No city in the world has more Kansas alums than Kansas City, other than Lawrence, Kansas. You would take where it is. So, like, I just don't know how you can argue that it's not an advantage. It would be the same advantage if it was Missouri. It'd be the same advantage if it was K-State. It'd be the same advantage for Iowa State. But it's an advantage. You got to at least be willing to argue that point.
That's what's weird to me is Iowa State fans are thrilled about the idea that they could potentially play.
They love Sprint Center.
In the Sweet 16 at the Sprint Center. Like, they're thrilled about that because it's basically their home field, home court advantage. KU has the same thing.
Someone on the text line says, CDOT, how many years are you going back for that win-loss at Sprint Center? The entire time the building has been up. I didn't do some fun with endpoints. I didn't do that. I did from the beginning. Since they had the Garth Brooks for 19 days straight at Sprint Center.
Raise the banner.
Until the last basketball game they've played there, KU has won 80% of their games there. It's an advantage. Really quickly, and we'll get to Chiefs coming up on the other side, is, and we'll talk even a little tournament coming up on the other side too. A national host called me yesterday and asked, what do you make of K-State? I don't have an answer. I think it's okay to not have an answer. But I don't know if any of us know exactly what to expect from K-State going into the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side, and we'll get back into the Chiefs coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
We were talking about a belief amongst KU fans that playing at Sprint Center is not an advantage. Text line 69306. If you take away those weak-seeded rounds in which KU has won, their record goes down. Yes, if you take away games they've won at Sprint Center, it changes the record in which they have won at Sprint Center. I think we all are on the same page when it comes to there. Another text on the Pros He Now Eat With The Purpose text line. It is an advantage in the sense of there will be more people in the stands cheering for them. That's it. But it doesn't mean they're going to play better. Having more fans in the stands cheer for you is part of your advantage. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that Sprint Center is an advantage for KU. That's just life, geography. I'm simply arguing that you shouldn't get that benefit if you're a 4 seed and not a 1 or a 2. When you played Oregon and you were the 1 seed, made perfect sense. You deserve to play. That should be the reward for your season. I don't think this KU team just deserves a lot of rewards based on how they played. Based on their complete and total body of work, I don't think they deserve more rewards. Especially over Kansas State. If you want to look at the opportunity to play at Sprint Center as a reward, which I think it is, and some of you disagree, I don't think that KU deserves that reward over Kansas State. That I've been asking the question, no one can answer it for me. What did winning the Big 12 get K-State? Other than a really cool t-shirt, other than a cut piece of net that I'm sure they'll carry with them to their graves, what did winning the Big 12 get K-State? They didn't get Tulsa as a closer region. They got shipped to San Jose. They didn't get the highest seed in the Big 12. That went to Texas Tech. They didn't get the opportunity to play in Kansas City. That went to Kansas, who finished third in their conference. What did winning the Big 12 get K-State? It didn't get them a whole lot. It's not really helping them now in the only part that it really helps you with. So, yeah, it definitely is an advantage, and it's definitely something that you will take. On the thought of K-State, I had a national host call me yesterday and ask, before our Raps the Bracket came out, he was like, I really like K-State. What do you make of them? I don't really know if you're K-State. Now, I know you guys will take this as hating, but it's the truth. K-State was the biggest beneficiary of the biggest upset in the history of the tournament. No team benefited more from last year than they did. And we also know the game-to-game fluke in which the NCAA tournament is. I'm not saying that I don't think K-State's a good team or that they can't advance. I wouldn't be shocked if this K-State team, still without Dean Wade, advances to the Elite Eight or makes a deep tournament run. There's certainly still enough talent there. You got Cartier Jada back, who's playing at a high level. You've got Barry Brown. You've got Xavier Sneed. You got a lot of still talent on this team. But we agree, your margin for error in not having a guy like Dean Wade just diminishes greatly. That all of us were excited about, seeing what a fully healthy K-State team could look like in the NCAA tournament, especially when you got Jada back. You were looking at a team of, I was saying, I would want to play K-State. If you were telling me back when we thought you were going to have Dean Wade and you thought when Jada was getting back, that was a team I would at least want to play. Now, oddly enough, Auburn has kind of become that team. I'd be worried about playing Auburn, which makes it different because it's here locally and we'll get to see potentially Kansas go up against them. I wouldn't want any part of Auburn with how they just played and given Tennessee a hot and ready 30 ball in the NCAA in the SEC tournament. I just don't know what to make of K-State. I think they're going to win their first game against UC Irvine, but then they are now in the situation of they're like every other team in the NCAA tournament that we think is good. You could lose in the first round, probably not, but could lose in the first round. You could also make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. If K-State had Dean Wade, if he was fully healthy and he had two good feet in this, I think K-State's a lock to get to the Sweet 16. I wouldn't have any question about K-State if they had Dean Wade. But now I think their margin of error is a little bit different, and given how they struggle offensively, it's a real crapshoot. Now, it's always a crapshoot in the NCAA tournament. It is even more of a crapshoot without knowing the health of either you consider Dean Wade to be their best player or certainly their 1A, 1B with Barry Brown.
He also does things that allow for them to kind of work offensively. Because if you were to say what is the one weakness or the weakest area for K-State, it's obviously their offense. And Dean Wade, with the ability to kind of stretch things out as a stretch four, that changes things for guys like Barry Brown, for Stokes, for Xavier Sneed, who works inside. Like, those guys can drive to the bucket a lot easier when Dean Wade's in there than when he's not.
I just want to read this text really quickly. I just want to read this text. It's about KU.
Shocker.
You have your answer about K-State. You just don't like it. It got them a 4 seed. They were never ranked over 15th in the poll. Why should they be seeded higher? I just firmly believe, and not everyone shares this belief, that the tournament committee should reward you for what you accomplished during the regular season. I mean this in all seriousness. What did KU accomplish this year? This is the least accomplished KU team in the last 15 years. They didn't do anything. What did they do? They won some games at the beginning of the season with Udoka. We agree. They probably don't win those games now. The team that we currently see playing, I don't know how you think if they didn't have Udoka, they beat Tennessee on a neutral site when Tennessee was playing well, or how they beat Michigan State at the beginning of the season, or how they beat Marquette. I don't think they win those games. I'm just asking, what did K-State accomplish? Or what did KU accomplish? Because I believe that the tournament should reward teams that accomplish something. That K-State's accomplishment of winning the Big 12 in the regular season should give you the nod over a team that we can agree is drastically different than how they were when they got their big-time wins. That's all I believe when it comes to K-State. I'm not even saying K-State should be seeded much higher than them. Just, they shouldn't be the ones being shipped out to San Jose. They shouldn't be the ones that don't have to play in Kansas City. That Kansas City should be deemed as a reward. I feel the same way about Iowa State, not just the anti-KU thing. Iowa State doesn't deserve the reward of playing there either. At least the Big 12 team, though. Like, that would be kind of messed up. If it was vice versa, KU fan, and you won the league, and you were telling me that K-State got sent to Kansas City, and you got sent to Tulsa, you got sent to San Jose, you'd be pissed about it. And that's fine. But that's what happened here. KU didn't accomplish much during the regular season. You guys hate this team. You guys hate this team. This is the most down I've seen KU fans about their team in a very long time. I'm trying to think of the time that KU fans have been least down on this team. This is the first time that I can ever remember KU fans are talking about them losing in the first round of the NCAA tournament. There are KU fans out there that legitimately think they're losing on Thursday. When was the last time you can remember a KU fan that came up to you and said, I think we can lose in the first round of the tournament? That's how vulnerable this team is. That my issue is that the tournament committee put more weight on what KU was at the beginning of the season as to what they were at the end of the season. K-State's a better team than you. The KU fan, K-State fan, college basketball fan. Who had the better season in your mind? Which team would you rather be heading into the tournament? Would you rather be KU or K-State? Which team do you think is more proud of what they accomplished throughout the course of the season, KU or K-State? The answer is K-State. So they should have got the reward of playing at K-State. That's my only argument. No shade towards KU. You didn't do much. You didn't accomplish much. K-State did.
How much were fans behind the 2015 team? I think that's maybe the last time that they were even remotely close to this, because that was the year they ended up playing Wichita State in the second round. And I think a lot of KU fans looked at that as a bad matchup for them. Maybe that was the last
time. It wasn't like this, though.
No, they're more down on them this year, but I'm just trying to think of the last time where KU fans were even frustrated this much.
This is maybe the difference, to answer your question. I don't think KU fans liked that team, the one you're talking about with Andrew Wiggins, because he was so sometimey. I used to always call him, he plays Casper ball, where sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. KU fans hate this team. KU fans genuinely and have a strong dislike for this current team and cannot wait for them to be done playing basketball. that I sit there and myself of, and BK, you and I are Missouri fans. I'll say that off the top. I watch guys like Charlie Moore, and I don't understand how he plays. Like, I legitimately watch Charlie Moore, and I do not understand how he sees the court at Kansas. I don't know how they don't have anyone better than him. He's one of the worst players I've ever seen at KU under Bill Self. I'm sure there's a couple other ones. I'm sure he might not be the worst. But if we were having a draft of feel the worst starting five that you would have of rotation players for KU, Charlie Moore is a first teamer. KU fans hate this team. This is the most down I've seen them, the most pessimistic, the most. KU fans have become Missouri fans when it comes to this team. They have become Missouri fans. Down on their own team, we can't beat Northwestern or Northeastern. We can't beat Auburn. We're not going very far in the tournament. This team stinks. KU fans over the last 2 months have turned into Missouri fans. The Missouri fans, and I'll say this, as someone who loves my Tigers, we love to beat up on our team. We love to poke fun and crack jokes and tell you how they stink and how they're not well coached. I get a thrill from making fun of Missouri. It brightens my day to make fun of Missouri. KU fan, be honest with yourself. You treat this KU team the exact same way that I treat Missouri. Never positive. Never. Now, I'm not saying they give you a lot of reasons to be positive about them. I can't think of a time in recent memory in which KU fans have been this pessimistic, this down on their team than it is right now.
And some of it is deserved. Some of it. I mean, the fact that this is the first team in basically 15 years to not win the Big 12, that's deserved of some dislike. The fact that this team doesn't have the dog in it the way that most other KU teams have in the past, it's deserved that you wouldn't like them the same amount. But at the same time, KU's a four seed. They're going up against Northeastern, who most of us have never seen in our lives. There's a good chance, there's an overwhelming likelihood they should win that game. So it's strange how down people are.
Coming up in just a little bit, Kansas City was trying to tell you something with trying to go after Earl Thomas. I'll tell you what it was coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Text line 69306 on the Protein House Eat with the Purpose text line. Love you, babe. A minute later. Oh, my bad. Wrong number. But C-Dot, you all right? also on the text line, the Protein House Eat with the Purpose text line. Man, I'm sorry, MU fans, but I know how you feel. This sucks. I don't know how teams are so excited to get into the tournament when they know they have no chance to win. This year, KU's goals are not much different than most other teams in the NCAA tournament. Their goal is, let's try to win one. Anything else is gravy. I could be wrong, but I know a lot of KU fans. I've got a lot of KU fan friends. I follow a lot of them. I don't know many KU fans that are giving them a chance to win against Auburn. I don't know a lot of KU fans that are picking them against Auburn. I don't know a lot of national people that are picking them. The expectation for this KU team is not to make it past the first weekend. It's to make it past the first game. It'll probably be tight, but you got enough talent. You should probably win that first game, and then you're running into one of the hottest teams in college basketball right now. I would want no part of Auburn. No part. You talk like when we were getting ready for the bracket and we were looking at teams and seeds and where they are, I would not want to play them. I would not want Auburn in my quadrant, in my pool, in my region. You got to go up against potentially in the second round. That's a very dangerous second round matchup. So the Chiefs try to sign Earl Thomas. Now, you guys might be saying, we know because they signed Tyrann Mathieu. Nope. They tried to sign Tyrann Mathieu and still wanted Earl Thomas on this team. From Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, the Ravens, quote, move money around. They had earmarked for C.J. Mosley over to Earl Thomas, who swooped in and essentially intercepted the five-time Pro Bowler before he could land with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs had a one-year, $12 million deal on the table to pair Thomas with Tyrann Mathieu, which looked like it was going to get a deal done. And then Earl Thomas, to the Baltimore media, told them that he thought he was going to Kansas City.
So I thought I was going to go to Kansas City.
Okay.
On a 2 year deal, 1 year deal. And I was just going to bet on myself and hit the market again. And then my agents called me, David Mulugeta and Andrew Kessler. I talked to them on the phone, and they said that Baltimore has a mega deal for you. And I say, hell yeah, that's where I'm going.
Hey, Earl Thomas, I'm not faulting you. Get paid. You broke your leg. You wanted to get paid from the Seattle Seahawks. You didn't get paid. I get it, my brother. But it should encourage you, Chiefs fans, of Veach is thinking big. I don't know how many general managers in the NFL would sign Tyrann Mathieu to the amount of money that they gave him and then sign another safety. Not like Earl Thomas plays corner. Now, I think the plan would have been we have Earl Thomas be our more traditional safety. We have Tyrann Mathieu be that jack of all trades. Sometimes he lines up at safety. Sometimes he lines up at inside corner. Sometimes he lines up in other things. I don't know what the plan was to use Tyrann Mathieu, but if you look at his versatility and all the different things he can do, I think it's clear you can find a place for him on the field, and he's certainly one of your top 11 defensive players. Probably one of your top three defensive players if you really look at all the things he can do. I think you got to be optimistic, and if they were willing to do something unconventional and outside the box when it comes to signing Tyrann Mathieu and Earl Thomas, because we agree, there were three big-time safeties in this market. There were some second-tier ones that guys like, LaMarcus Joyner, Ha Ha Clinton Dix, Adrian Amos. There were some other safety names out there. The three big ones were going to be Earl Thomas, Landon Collins, and Tyrann Mathieu. You sign one of them, Collins got the bag. Earl Thomas ended up getting the bag. But you're telling me that Veach's plan was to try to bring both of them, and Thomas says that he was prepared to take the one-year bet-on-himself kind of deal to see what happens in Kansas City? Should really encourage you the fact of that was going to be the holy blank kind of move that I think many of you want the Chiefs to make. I want the Chiefs to make. It'd be a lot of fun if they made that kind of move. I still think they got that move in there. I don't think that that was their only swing. Now, they've taken a lot of swings when it comes to Earl Thomas, and they've missed both times. But the mindset that you have for trying to acquire Earl Thomas, BK, that's the one that I'd like for you to have. You were willing to go out there and get the number one guy on your list, which we saw from Rappaport, we saw from Albert Breer last week. Tyrann Mathieu was their number one safety, probably their number one overall player in free agency. If you're willing in free agency to go get your number one player, and then you can convince your number two player, a potential Hall of Famer Earl Thomas, to take a one-year fully guaranteed prove-it deal to try to go win a ring, that's an incredible scenario that we're going from if they had signed Earl Thomas. Not the Chiefs could have the 19th ranked defense. We're talking potential top 10 if you then factor in draft pick compensation. You could still go out there and do a lot of various things. This would have put the Chiefs not over the top, but this would have put them in the conversation of a top 12 defense in my mind.
It might be hard for some to say because they didn't get him. And so Earl Thomas isn't going to be playing in Kansas City, so you didn't end up with that as a possibility. But I do think Brett Veach deserves a little credit here. Because last year, right before the trade deadline, we were told Brett Veach really wanted Earl Thomas. And that was right before he ended up getting hurt, and then obviously it couldn't happen because of the injury to Earl Thomas. Now, we have a report that comes out from Albert Breer that says there was a one-year $12 million deal, essentially the franchise tag, on the table for Earl Thomas, and he was ready to do it. Earl Thomas admitted as much. And then, at the last minute, Baltimore comes in, they give him the three-year deal. So I think Brett Veach does deserve a little bit of credit there. But now the question becomes, all right, Brett Veach, you were willing to go do that. What's your backup plan? Yeah. With Earl Thomas not in the fold, now what do you go
to? Yeah, I'm very curious to see what that deal is. Because the one-year deal that you had on the table for Earl Thomas, and Ndamukong Suh signs that contract. And Ndamukong Suh takes the one-year, and you probably get him cheaper than the $12 million. You probably get Ndamukong Suh for the one-year 10, one-year 9. You probably get Clay Matthews for a little cheaper than what you were going to sign Earl Thomas. The big time, now, I wouldn't say those guys are the player that I think Earl Thomas is, but you still, if you had that kind of cap space, and maybe the argument now is, and what Veach will tell you, is we spent that money. We just spent that money to go get Alex Okafor. We just spent that money to go get Bashaud Breeland. But Bashaud Breeland's deal guarantees him $2 million, $3 million. It's a heavy incentive-laden deal. Alex Okafor's deal, the moment we see more contract details about that, is going to end up being very beneficial to the Kansas City Chiefs. That this is a great opportunity, I think, for the Chiefs. That I continue to say, if you got a quarterback on a rookie contract, you got to be hyper-aggressive when it comes to team building, because the financial window for your team to win a national, or for your team to win a Super Bowl is right there. It's right there. And to me, going out there and getting a guy like Earl Thomas potentially when you already had Tyrann Mathieu in the fold is the kind of thinking I think you should have. That's a hyper-aggressive move. That's two, certainly with Earl Thomas, potential Hall of Famer. Tyrann Mathieu, a potential second-team All-Pro, honorable mention All-Pro. You've added two great players. You couple that with Chris Jones, you give yourself a really strong foundation, and you give yourself a really good chance to advance deep in the NFL playoffs. Can I tell you guys something? I just want to have a little conversation before we get to the 5 o'clock. Do you guys have different things of which you know that you've gotten old? Because I think one of those things have happened to me. The worst thing I think you can ever do is WebMD yourself. Like, I'm like most men. I don't want to go to the doctor. You know, a little sleep, a little water, a little chicken noodle soup will fix whatever problem I have. I'm one of those guys. I'm tougher than you guys give me credit for. But BK, I don't even know if this is possible, but the internet told me it's possible, so it has to be true. I think I've become lactose intolerant. I'm serious. I love ice cream. Love milk. I had a bowl of cereal this weekend, was struggling the week. And that's been happening more frequently because I don't live that far from Betty Ray's ice cream. Incredible ice cream. I'm making a dollar for them, but great ice cream. And I've started to know when I eat that ice cream late at night, things don't normally end up that good for me. Things don't end up that good. That I'm like, when I was a kid, oh, I could eat all the ice cream in the world. I could have 4 or 5 scoops. Didn't mean anything. I love cereal. Cereal's amazing. It's starting to hurt me that I can't do some of the things that I used to be able to do when I was younger. I don't even know if this is possible. I don't know if you can go from not. Maybe I've always been lactose. Don't know. But BK, this is the first sign of me getting old. I didn't think this day was ever going to come. But I might have to officially give up ice cream. I might have to officially. Maybe some of you are going through the same thing I'm going through. And I try to be honest with you guys. I try to be honest and transparent about what's going on in my life. But I think I might have to retire ice cream and milk. Because it doesn't like me the way I love it anymore.
I don't even know what to say to you right now. I don't understand how this just happens. Like, is this actually a thing that can happen late in life?
I don't know.
I feel like at some point you would have realized, you know, when you were 20, when you were 15, when you were 5, I can't eat ice cream.
I'm serious. I'm not, like, the text line thinks I'm joking. I'm not joking. I got ice cream a couple days ago. I almost had to miss work the next day. I was struggling.
The text line is saying this is legit and that the same thing happened to them.
I'm serious. I didn't know this was possible. Like, everybody says when you turn 30, your body starts to do all these different things and all of this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Somebody's saying go get almond milk. I feel like that doesn't help.
That might be. I need some medicine. I need to go to the doctor and ask a real doctor this question. Because I'm telling you, I love milk. Every day in college, you know how like every college you have like, we had Lion Bucks. I'm sure you had that at Mizzou. Like the little cafeteria and you go in there and you can buy food and all that kind of stuff. I would drink strawberry milk every day and it was delicious. I love strawberry milk. I don't know if that's I don't know if I can do that anymore. I don't know if I can do that anymore. It just doesn't sit right with me anymore. That I'm saying is I think I've developed and I'm lactose intolerant now. And I didn't know that was possible till I WebMD'd it. And then I WebMD'd and I think I was about to die. You know, WebMD always takes your symptoms to the like utmost extreme. That I'm serious. I need you guys' help. That's all I need. I need you guys' help. I wanted to say it right before our 5 o'clock audience. This is where we get like 8 people listening. And before 5, it's like 11 people. So I need you guys' help. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll do a couple of things. We'll get you the top stories of the day in Kansas City, and we will announce our winner for our trip to Oklahoma City. So if you were trying to get that trip, don't drink any milk, don't eat any ice cream, and come right back in 2 minutes as The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.